The Babylon Project was a dream given form.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
From a neatly landscaped bunker somewhere in the heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert, and once again this evening, we're blessed with family visiting us here in the bunker tonight. Besides that, we've also got some furniture that we'll be moving a little later this evening. So rather than try to squeeze a new program around all of that, we're taking the opportunity to go back into the archives again for an interview that was foundational in helping shape our worldview, I think, or at least refining it a little bit. It's an interview that hasn't been on the internet in at least a couple of years. And I think it's rather timely because it dovetails with the interview that I just did with Dr. Michael Heiser about the Divine Council on A View from the Bunker this past Sunday evening. One of the key points in the Divine Council paradigm is the understanding that God himself not only intervened after the Tower of Babel or at the Tower of Babel and divided the nations, he divided the nations according to Deuteronomy 32, verse 8, according to the number of the sons of God. In other words, God placed lesser divine beings, created divine beings, angels, if you will, in charge of the 70 nations that were divided up after the Tower of Babel. Those angels, lesser Elohim, rebelled against God and began accepting worship on their own. And these are the beings that we know from the Old Testament as the gods of the nations surrounding the ancient Hebrews, gods like Molech and Chemosh and Dagon and Baal, Asherah, and so forth. And so we got to wondering a couple of years ago, what was it about the Tower of Babel that was so offensive to God that he personally came down and decided to intervene? So for some answers and some speculation, we turn to author, scientist, and researcher Stan Dale. And here's that interview from December of 2005 on PID Radio.
We're pleased to have back with us by telephone Stan Dale, author, researcher, archaeologist of some note, and all-around adventurous guy.
Renaissance man.
Yes, by telephone to talk about Stargates, the Tower of Babel, and various and assorted other things. Stan, thank you for joining us again on PID Radio.
Thank you for having me, guys. It's good to talk to you again. And by the way, my name really isn't Stan Da Vinci, but
I thought that portrait looked familiar.
The Dale name is much more noble.
When I was predicting, I'm still predicting earthquakes with the data we've got, but there was a while there I had to start telling people, look, I'm just doing this scientifically. I'm not using psychic powers and that kind of junk. And I said, don't call me Nostra Dale anymore. So.
We're going to have to get you a theme song.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Banana boat song, that'll do.
I'm sure you hear that one a lot.
Yeah,
I do.
Oh, God.
Well, Stan, one of our listeners had asked us about the Tower of Babel, sent us a note, suggested that might be something to talk about. And so we're kind of taking a couple of looks at it. The history we'll talk about with author Peter Goodgame. But we heard you interviewed by Steve Quayle on his radio program a couple of weeks back,
right
after that patent was announced for the gentleman who had in Indiana for the anti-gravity device.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I guess the talk of space-time curvature and whatnot led to discussions of portals and dimensional portals. What do you think would have prompted God to come down to Earth and intervene at the Tower of Babel to stop construction?
Well, it's interesting because in that account in the Hebrew, in fact, I think in the King James translation as well, when Nimrod is building the Babel Tower, by the way, in the Mideastern dialect, Babel is gateway of God.
Okay.
Right.
That's what that means. It's not the Tower of Confusion. It's Bob, door, and El, God, for mm-hmm. like Elohim. Anyway, when he was building that, he was building a ziggurat-type structure, which had, it was probably square-sectioned at the base, like a pyramid, but it had steps going all the way around in a winding spiral up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been a round one. There's discussion whether it was round or square, but basically it was conic-shaped going up many stories. And he was building this to access the gods, in essence, the doorway to the gods. Now you think, well, a tall building, they could have gotten a tall mountain and done the same thing. Why did this tall building make any difference?
Yeah.
And in the Hebrew it says, let us go down and just, you know, knock it down, lest they climb up here and become as one of us.
Right.
Now, there's a stele I have from the area that I've taken off the internet, some very nice high-resolution photos of it, which shows Marduk, an ancient king in the area there, standing at the base of a ziggurat, and there are other people climbing up underneath him who have been thrown off or killed or whatever from the power of the gods underneath this ziggurat. And it's an old, well-worn stele. But up at the top of it, I put it through Photoshop and changed the contrast, and I could find the very apex of it was a circular or spherical thing, because it was done in two dimensions. I can't tell either way, but it was glowing, a big circular ring-looking thing that was glowing. And in some of the translations from that period, we find that they built the ziggurats to allow the gods to come through from where they come through with a lot of energy and a burst of light at the top, and then walk around slowly, and they even put food stations at various places down the long walk down for the gods to sit and refresh themselves while they were discharging energy so they wouldn't hurt anybody. So it sounds for all the world like a stargate, but one that has to be high enough above the dirt not to short out, to electricity to ground.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And I think from what I can, from reading other portions of Hebrew and Chaldean-type stories, that the area that they came from is not like another star system, per se, out, you know, in some direction you could point a finger, but from right around us in a parallel universe that exists right where we are, but on like a different matter wave, if you wish.
Mm-hmm.
The portal, the gateway, would open up between our world and the parallel universe, which is all around us. And there are many parallel universes, we think, at least seven that the scriptures speak of, around Earth.
Like the seventh heaven.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, exactly.
Okay.
We try to relate everything that we discuss on this to biblical documentation so that we don't drift too far off of what the truth is.
Right.
So I do think that in Iraq, Iran, somewhere in that area, perhaps at Basra, I won't go into the discussion, it's too long on that, but that there might have been a gateway ziggurat in that area. And there may well be again in the near future, like in the next year or two, because I'm certain that they're going to make the announcement here very shortly on the alien presence and the cover-up officially.
Do you see any connection between that and the abyss where the strong angel comes down with the key?
Well, it's possible. It's possible. I know that area of the planet has is a thin crust there.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the bottomless pit that he opens, a bottomless pit, if you try to visualize that as a normal pit, you can't. But if you visualize the inside of a hollow sphere, that is bottomless. There is no bottom.
Well, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that, yes, that does tie in quite closely with that.
I think Sharon was alluding to some of the information we discussed with Peter Goodgame in the location of the ancient temple to the god Enki, which was called the Abzu, or the Abyss, was located in that area at the ancient city of Eridu, which the Sumerians remembered as the very first city, which, of course, biblically would be the city that was built for Cain, or by Cain, rather, for his son Enoch. And interestingly, Enoch's son was named Irad, I-R-A-D, which is very similar to Eridu.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have looked at that, too. I'm not sure that my view on it is correct, but when I found the Garden of Eden in the scriptures, being modern-day the Danakil Plains east of Ethiopia, when all the land masses of India stuff were together, the Indus Valley, river valley, connected to the Persian Gulf.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not to the Persian Gulf, to the Red Sea near the Danakil Plains. And there I found evidence of Cain's migration eastward there, directly eastward, because the Garden of Eden was down there, eastward into the Indus River Valley and up to a town now called, it's been built up many times, called Shalkot, which we think was Enoch City because it changed name several times. But
okay.
Anyway, it doesn't matter. Either place is fine. But I do think that from a number of things that I've heard from people in the Pentagon, that the buzzword in the secret of secrets in the Pentagon is the Sumerian gods are returning. And that's what they're referring to, is that whole area that Peter...
Wow.
Can you repeat that again, just in case anybody missed it? The buzzword in...
In the Pentagon, in the, you know, the military circles that are in the know about the cover-up here, they kind of, in whispered tones, talk about the return of the Sumerian gods. And they're talking about the what we would call aliens or fallen angels returning into the Middle East, into old Sumer area.
The Anunnaki.
Well, could be.
Under the ancient names.
Do you think that has anything to do with why we're in Iraq?
Possibly.
Because I know that there are people out there that have conjectured that one of the reasons we went in there, and I'm not saying I buy this, but I think it's intriguing, is that one of the reasons we went in was to raid the museum, to get artifacts out.
Well, I've heard that, and I know the artifacts were taken to safety by someone, but I think probably the major motivations were strategic placement in the Middle East over the growing potential for an alliance between the Arab Muslim nations there. Since the Balfour Declaration, since the end of World War I, when Great Britain repartitioned the Middle East, they drew lines into territorial borders that they shouldn't have, and they did it on purpose so that one tribe would be against another tribe or one country against the other because they had land that didn't belong to them, but it was given to them by the British.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea behind that British foreign policy there was to destabilize the Middle East so that we didn't have a rising threat from the predominantly Muslim population there because they'd be too busy fighting themselves. They couldn't get together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now then you've got a new leader coming up in Iran, a young, strong force that is going to, he's already making talk about unifying the Arab Muslim nations against Israel and the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Totally destroy Israel and also to wound the heck out of us because we support them and have half the Jewish population in New York.
Right.
So I think what we're trying to do is to hold a military foothold or presence there legitimately in Iraq or the Middle East, to try to defend ourselves against the United Arab effort. I don't think it will work, but I think that was one of the major factors. And it was not so much to secure oil in the area, because what is probably not known by your listeners is when I was working for the guys, Sir John and Henry Edward Teller and Henry Somerset and those people, they controlled governments. They told leaders what to do. This was the Illuminati people speak up. And they told me that the reason they were keeping a lot of the technology back and not using the Western oil was that they wanted to deplete the Middle Eastern Arab oil fields so they had nothing left to barter with. They wanted to break them so they couldn't buy weapons, they couldn't organize and get high tech. Obviously, this has failed, but that was what they started 40, 50 years ago. It was an extension of the Crusades, Western Judeo-Christian nations going against the Muslim nations in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of oil, a huge amount of oil, capped off in Australia and in the North Sea, a number of places over the planet. And when I say we, I mean the Western nations. And a lot of it primarily U.S. Finance stuff. But it's been capped off, not to be used, and it will only be used for fuel as a transition in their plan once a global government set up so that inequities can be legislated immediately, you know, to make life bearable for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to transition over the next 30, 40 years after that into a non-petroleum, non-combustible, non-fossil fuel type power source for cars, aircraft, and the home. But they had to have complete control of the planet to do it without creating a huge disparity between nations and increasing the likelihood for war. This is their altruistic view. And that's why I think they allowed the oil fields to burn for a while before they put them out when they went into Gulf War I.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting.
Okay. Interestingly, you know, you were talking about the glowing orb at the top of the ziggurat and that stele that you have, and I'm looking at the back of my dollar bill and seeing the Masonic symbol there with the eye, the all-seeing eye with the glowing circle or orb around it. Do you think that that was inspired by the ancient Stargate or whatever it was?
Gosh, you know, I'd never thought about it, Derek, but it does sound like it could have been. It's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
It's glowing, and it's the eye of God. Well, yeah, I guess it could be.
Hmm.
That's an interesting observation.
Well, it just occurred to me. I hadn't thought about that before. Because I've heard you mention the stele before, but it never occurred to me until just now. Reason we mentioned the fellow with his anti-gravity device and the Stargate technology, the portal, you mentioned an incident that occurred while you were in Australia, down in Fremantle, with a fellow who asked for your help on some of this technology. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. At that time, that's going back about, 20 years, my work had become fairly well known across Australia. My books having sold the equivalent of a billion seller here down there, and
wow,
in there I had a section on Nikola Tesla in the Cosmic Conspiracy book, and I had done a number of public lectures on it. And somewhere in one of those public lectures, I think I had mentioned the fact that I had built a coil, a toroidal coil, for anti-gravity test, which I had done back in Dallas before we went to Australia. And it had bent the light in the room around and burned out. And I discussed a bit more how I did it in the taped interview, lecture. And this guy down in Fremantle, which is about a 45-minute drive south through traffic from Perth in Western Australia, he lived down there, and he rang me up one day. He said, "Oh, look, my name is whatever it was." And he says, "Look, I wonder if you come help me with a problem I've got on a Tesla coil. I'm building some toroidal coils here, and they don't seem to be working right." And I said, "Well, I'll do it if I can, you know." I said, where are you located? And he told me the address. And so he says, "Just wait outside. It's kind of a warehouse that I live in, and I'll come open the big door for you." I said, "Okay, fine." So I suspicioned something was weird there, and so I called a friend of mine, Kim. I said, "Kim, I've got a live turkey on the line here that's wanting to help him with his toroidal coil. I don't know him from Adam, and it's like meeting at a big warehouse next to the docks there, you know."
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you can just see X-Files all over this.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I said, "All right, then will you come down with me?" He said, "Yeah." So we got in the car and drove down, and we parked outside this, you know, big, old, ancient brick warehouse that had been there for probably 100 years at least, serving the ships coming in. Closed up. But we parked where we were supposed to, and we knocked on this big door, one of these sliding red wood-type doors. And sure enough, up he comes, and he rolls it open to let us come in. And he said, "Oh, hi." I said, "Oh, this is my friend, Kim." And, "Oh, okay." And so we come in. He closes again, locks it up, and takes us into the center, into this kind of darkened warehouse. And in the middle of it there, on the left side, there was this his office research area where he built his coils and stuff. And it's kind of fenced off with, you know, partitions, but you can see over the top of it. So we went in, and he said, "Oh, here's this Tesla coil I've been building." And he had built a wonderful Tesla coil. I mean, it was one of the best ones I've seen. It was perfectly tuned, you know, gave nice singing arcs off the top and everything. And I said, "Well, that is amazing." I said, "You know, show me how you did it." And I said, "Oh, yeah, well, that capacitor there, that's the way to solve that problem. That's good. Excellent." He said, "Now, here's my real problem." He took us back over to another table. And here was this thing about the size of a pizza pan, and big pizza. But laying there, about that diameter, was this coil that looked like a big donut, if you wish. And the donut part of it that you would bite into was about 3 inches in diameter. And the hole in the middle of it was the rest of the pizza pan. And he had wrapped two or three coils of wire around this donut in different angles to each other, and was trying to pulse a resonant circuit through it like you did with the Tesla coil. And he said, "You know, I heard that you built one of these." And I said, "Yeah, mine was slightly different, but the same principle." And I said, "You know, mine, I don't know whether I'm going to be much help." I said, "Because mine, when I fired it, I got nauseous instantly, and the light from the room around me seemed to be painted on saran wrap or, plastic wrap, and it it just pulled into the center of the coil, like the whole room was just sucked into it. But it wasn't. It's just the light, I said. And then it burned out, and it wouldn't. I couldn't get it to work again. He said, well, now, that's what interests me. He said, I had the same thing happen with this coil here, and I can't get it to work again. So I built another coil, and I put it here on the table. I couldn't get it to work. I moved it across the room, and it worked, and then it burned out. Then it wouldn't work again. He said, that's what I'm trying to figure out. So we're sitting here talking all this, and my friend Kim is circling behind this guy, looking over his desk and papers and things, just being a bit nosy. And he lifted a calendar off the wall a bit with his finger very quietly, and there was Hebrew written behind it.
Huh.
Kim gave me the nod back there, and he says, you know, with these eyebrows, look what I'm going to show you. And so he moved that, and I did a quick glance, and the word for sword in Hebrew was hanging right down, you know, vertically behind his calendar. So then Kim went around moving some other things, and there was Hebrew written under other things hidden in the room. So Kim says to the guy, look, if you got a toilet, look, we've been here so long, you know, I just got to go. So the guy says, oh, yeah, all right, well, just stick to where I tell you. Go down that hallway down there and turn left, and, you know, he gave him instructions through this dark factory, and so Kim wanders off. So this guy and I continued to talk. I knew Kim was wanting to go nose around, see what else was out there.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back with his eyes as big as saucers, and he says, well, I guess you better take a leak, too, you know, because, you know, nod. And I said, look, here, you guys talk for a second. I guess I got to go, too. You know, I went off. And when I went past Kim, he said, look in the room on your right. And so I went on down there. And the room on the right was this big kind of square room, you know, completely sealed off except for a doorway that was locked. And there was a glass window about maybe 8 inches square in it. And I looked in there, and yeah, I tell you what, my jaw nearly hit the floor. There was a big goat's head with horns like the Satan symbol up on the wall over a throne, a throne chair. And on the floor was the big circle, you know, with the pentagram and stuff in it and candles. Oh. And they weren't going at the moment, but, and you know, all that devil stuff that you want to see was inside there. And it suddenly dawned on me, I thought, oh, yeah, this guy's up to no good. And I went down to the restroom thing like I was going to, and I saw stairwells down into the lower quarters. So I went and made the stop and came back. And I said to this guy, I said, hey, I couldn't help but notice you have a basement here. He said, oh, those are the old cellars where they used to kind of use them to store stuff and some little jail cells and things down there. And I thought, right, this guy is trying to gate beings through with his coil. That's what he's up to. So we excused ourselves as politely as we could a little bit thereafter and left. But he was actively, as a Satanist or whatever, trying to open the gateway to a parallel world, whether it be the underworld or levels above us, I don't know. But it was not for good.
So this system that he was building was basically just a big electromagnetic coil or device that he thought would open that a doorway between our universe and then one of these parallel universes.
Yeah, and I don't know how he got to that conclusion from what documents he was reading, whatever, but he had studied Kabbalah,
mm-hmm.
and all I can assume is he may have derived it from some of that. anyway, it was spooky. We actually couldn't wait to get out of there, you know.
And we presume that you didn't really help him all that much.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
Good for you.
Wow. It's mind-blowing. It really is. That here we've got guys who are trying to use modern technology combined with, one would presume that the words on the walls were some sort of spell or something that he was trying to invoke or cast or something? Or did you not get enough of a look to really get a sense for what he was trying to do?
I couldn't do it, no. I am aware of that. But he was just a scaly character, and I knew from seeing what I did see that it was stuff that had been used in ritual magic before or, you know, witchcraft, that sort of stuff. But anyway, it's... I didn't want to know anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Well, the thing that we wanted to convey to listeners is that this stuff is out there and it does exist.
It does. Now, Stan, this is different. You're talking about this coming through a dimensional portal.
Yeah.
That would be different than, say, conjuring up a demon, quote unquote, in some sort of occult ritual, right?
I Well, I don't know, because I don't know what they'd use in the ritual.
I haven't personally done it. I try not to do those things. In fact, I just assume they not come through. But yeah, I was just thinking, if maybe there are demons that are actually in our world, and then there are others that are fallen angels, maybe, that are in another dimension, and they have to come through a different way. I was thinking in particular about the Babylon working that was done by Jack Parsons.
I don't know that, or about his work, but if you go back to about the angel going down, unlocking the abyss, let him out.
Mm-hmm.
That's an underworld, a dimension beneath us, an energy. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
A lot of people over the ages have reported that ghosts, when they appeared in the room with them, lowered the temperature of the room.
Yes, that's a very common observation. Right.
That's true.
As the energy density decreases in the under parallel universe, in other words, it's less energy per square centimeter or cubic centimeter.
Right.
If they open a gateway into our world, they suck energy out of our world into theirs because they're cooler than we are.
Oh,
sure.
Okay.
And if you go the other way and you look at, like, Enoch's visions and various of the other Old Testament visions where they've seen God appear in the heavens and come down,
mm-hmm.
it's always attended by fire and smoke because they're more energetic as they come into our world. And
right.
Down.
Okay.
And that's why the Stele was there when they went through a portal instead of gating through with a sled device. The portal you had to de-energize as you came down. Why not? You know, when Moses is up on Mount Sinai, he says to God, "Look, I hate to be intrusive, but I'd like to see what you look like." And he says, "Well, don't come any closer. I'm going to direct you into this cleft of the mountain here, and I'm going to pass by in a cloud. You can see my
mm-hmm.
shadow."
Mm-hmm.
The reason was, if he got too close, because God was glorified or energized, appearing from his level of the heavens, he was so energized that his energy would just destroy Moses' body.
It would have burned up, sure.
Yeah. So,
and when Moses came down, his face was glowing.
Well, he glowed for several days. He had to hide his face from everybody.
Yeah.
And that's why.
So then theoretically, Stan, we could say that it's possible hell has frozen over? If they're on
I like it. You've had your cup of coffee this morning.
Oh,
dear. Yeah.
Well, Stan, thank you so much for sharing this. These stories. I mean, and I don't mean stories from the standpoint of fictional stories, but I mean your experiences. Let's put it that way, and your knowledge. It's really an education, and boy, what we wouldn't give for an opportunity to just sit down over dinner sometime and just pick your brain.
Yeah.
We don't mean that in a cannibalistic way either. We're just not into that anymore.
Good. Lucky for me. All right, well, we'll do it again then.
All right, Stan. Thank you very much. Stan Dale, thank you for being with us on PID Radio.
Thank you.
God bless, Stan.
Bye-bye.
A link to Stan's website where you can find information about the books he's written, the research that he does into earthquake prediction, and other things, and, of course, daily news updates will all be in the show notes at PIDradio.com, as well as links to all of our places on the web, our pages at Facebook and MySpace and Twitter and LinkedIn and everywhere else you can find us. Our email address for your comments, suggestions, and questions is radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of here. Don't let the hard times get you down. Older days will disappear. And living in the past, God can do a new thing now, in a kingdom that will last. He'll make a way across your wilderness, like a river flows in desert land.
news and analysis on demand.
This is PID Radio.